Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. As we heard yesterday on our Death and Dying in the 21st Century series, palliative care offers medical, emotional, and even spiritual support as treatment to cure a life-threatening illness transitions into quality-of-life management. This is when some patients will choose to go into hospice care, one aspect of palliative care, to help ease the journey of dying. The nonprofit Horizon Home Care and Hospice is one of the state's largest full-service providers with in-home care and an inpatient unit located in Mequon. Katie Curry is the manager of volunteer services there. She helps direct more than 150 volunteers that serve in 14 unique capacities, including providing companionship in a patient's home, offering respite for caregivers, serving in the inpatient unit, arranging flowers for patients' rooms, and even assisting nurses in repositioning patients. But there's one unique opportunity that only a select 20 volunteers fulfill, the Final Hours Program. In this role, volunteers are present with patients while they are actively dying. While this can be an unsettling experience for some people, Corey says these highly trained volunteers consider it a privilege to be with a patient at the end of life. Corey tells Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce more about the Final Hours Program, but first she talks a little bit about the mission of hospice care in general.
Here at Horizon, our mission is to make sure that we bring the comforts of home to that patient and the family. Whether they're in their home or not, you know, we want them to feel comfortable. We want them to know that they can die with dignity and respect. We want them to know that as a community, we care about them and that we want to hear their life story. Whatever the need is, be it spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, physically, we will take care of you. And we've got your back. And I think we need more individuals to really step up and know that this is an opportunity for them not only to make an exceptional difference in the lives of other people, but to also feel rewarded.
So I wanted to have you just give us a general overview of the Final Hours program. Mm-hmm. I want to have you talk a little bit about why was it necessary to have volunteers to fill these positions?
You know, when volunteers are serving in the Final Hours program, what our primary goal is for them to do is really offer a presence to the patient and the family. They're there to be a bedside companion, talking to the patient, talking to the family, or not talking at all. It's really whatever is needed from the patient and the family at this time. It's really a presence for someone so that no one dies alone. And in Final Hours, though, these 20 individuals are on call to go into the home for, you know, a time frame that works for them. And, you know, they can accept or decline this request, but generally they don't because they know the significance of being present for someone while they're dying. And they love being that presence for someone. They've either had an experience in their life and understand the meaning behind it, or they've learned something along the way. And that, you know, a community really needs to come together to make sure that we recognize those who've lived this life and we hear their story.
When is it determined that a patient will require this extra support and the families require this extra support?
Extra support is determined when, you know, the doctor or nursing staff really recognize that, okay, this individual, this patient is likely in their final days of life. Maybe they have a day, maybe they have 3 days, but we need to, around the clock, have support for this person so that they're comfortable, so that they're not alone when they die. And so really, we hear from the staff what the need is, and then this volunteer is really an additional presence and an additional support for the family, and of course, again, to make sure that patient is not alone if the family can't be there for that patient.
So when the volunteer is there, what are they instructed to do? Obviously, this is such a sensitive time for both the patient mm-hmm. and the family. They must be trained to be specifically sensitive to this time.
They are. You know, I will tell you that the training initially sounds overwhelming. But once a volunteer is going through this process, they understand why, because they really need to be prepared to be a presence for the dying. And so they're trained how to communicate with the dying. They're trained how to communicate with the family. They're trained how to provide comfort measures like maybe hand massage or foot massage or lotion or mouth swabbing, additional things that allow that patient to feel that someone is there for them, they're not alone. And it could be as simple as opening up a window to bring in some fresh air for that individual. Whatever the need is, that volunteer is doing strictly supportive care. They're not really moving the patient too much. They can reposition the patient, but they're not, you know, cleaning the patient. That's more of the nurse's position.
So how do you prepare volunteers for this? I mean, firstly, what are your volunteers like? What kinds of qualities do they have that prepare them for taking on this volunteer activity? I don't know that this is maybe the volunteering position for everyone.
Sure, it's not the volunteering position for everyone. And the funny thing is people, when they first come to the organization, they think, no, this isn't for me. But the more they get to know, the more they understand that hospice isn't this scary monster, the more that they see the benefit of hospice, they want to get involved. I can tell you, when I interview someone, within the first 5 seconds, I decide whether or not I want this person on my team. Because in my mind, I'm thinking, if I'm dying, do I want this person present with me? And there's a lot of things that go on in the interview. You know, I hear their story. Is this person maybe too close to hospice? Did they just lose a loved one? And will they be able to focus on the patient and the family rather than their own personal experiences? Does this person interrupt me while I'm interviewing? You know, because truthfully, this is about the patient and the family. So are they going to do this to the patient and the family? Are they going to be able to, you know, be still, be quiet, be alone, you know, and maybe say a prayer or meditate for that patient and family, or just hear their stories rather than need to talk? And of course, reliability. You know, we need to make sure that people are committed to wanting to make a difference in the community and understand that this is one of the most powerful ways to do so. And I think hospice in general, once you're close to that subject, people start to gain this magnificent perspective for life. I know for me, I feel that I've found the secret to living, because it really is, it's such a fragile time, and what a privilege for me to be in your presence while you've lived this beautiful life journey.
So how do you prepare? I mean, what are some of the challenges that you have to prepare volunteers for, situations that they're going to encounter while they're providing this service in the program?
Grief happens prior to and after the death of a loved one, and so we have to prepare them to be ready for any type of emotion. You know, we could have a family member who's angry, and they could take that out on the volunteer. How does the volunteer professionally and calmly respond in that situation? Does the volunteer get close to this patient? You know, will this volunteer also need grief counseling? And that does happen. We prepare the volunteer to understand every single physical challenge that these patients will go through, so that they can be prepared to walk into a patient room and know what they're about to maybe see. We train them to learn that the sounds of an individual when they're dying is heavier, and you know, there might be a gurgling sound in the patient, and that can be intimidating or frightening. So they have to be really the superhero in this position and kind of go in and know. These are often the expectations of how our patients die. How can I help them live up until they die?
What is the benefit for the patient to have that additional individual there to supporting them as they die, as they go through this process, which we all inevitably will?
You know, the benefit for the patient and the family, because that's what hospice really is about, is that we are comforted knowing that spiritually, psychologically, emotionally, physically, someone is there for us. We're not alone in this, because this could be very scary. And so the volunteer is a warm, positive presence who, you know, offers this comfort and reassurance at the bedside in whatever capacity is needed, or whatever way the family needs that support, or whatever way the patient needs that support. And it could be playing music. It could be holding their hand. It could be reading them the business journal, you know, because that was what they did every single morning. So it's really whatever the need of the patient, whatever the need the patient has.
I would imagine a certain amount of the training for the volunteers would have to be about how to talk to a person who is dying and not say the wrong things, you know, talk about hope or the future in a certain way that would be completely inappropriate in that situation, which many people who find themselves in that situation don't know what to say.
That's completely true. one of the biggest pieces of the training is, as a volunteer, you must leave your special beliefs at the door and walk into this person's space, be it in their home, be it in an inpatient setting, and bring, you know, a sense of listening ears and positive reassurance again. You want to learn about the special beliefs of the patient and the family. And often, it's really an amazing cultural exchange, you know. But the volunteer isn't the one leading that. It's the patient who lets you know about what they've been through and sharing their life story and their, you know, unique experiences and cultural stories.
You mentioned before how the volunteers and yourself mm-hmm. feel that this is a privilege. Describe that privilege. What response have you gotten from volunteers who do this work?
Well, we've gotten tremendous positive response. I think when I ask a volunteer who's either in the patient's home or in, you know, a skilled nursing facility, why do you do this? What do you get from this? They will tell you that they walk away knowing immediately that they were a part of this person's life and how that feels to them like such an honor to have known them for just a little bit before they transition or, you know, whatever the next step is. But the privilege is really in getting to know that patient and feeling like you have made a significant impact in their life at the end of their life.
What about the families? What did they view the role of the final hours mm-hmm. volunteer as?
The families are so appreciative. They are able to, you know, take a nap or get rest knowing that someone is present for this loved one. Or if also present with the patient, you know, they have additional reassurance and comfort there with them. This is unique to all of us. Death is going to be a very unique process, and not everyone knows what to do. And the volunteer, through their training and through their own experiences, can often help guide that and do so in a way that allows the family and the patient to know that this doesn't have to be a scary time. This can be a beautiful time, and wow, I get to participate in this.
You talked before about the role of community, mm-hmm. of having these volunteers, mm-hmm. these members of the community, participate in this transition or however you want to describe
right.
the process of dying. I wonder if that's something we've lost these days, that it seems like death so often happens in a very clinical setting that we're unprepared when it does happen in our homes or in an inpatient unit mm-hmm. in a hospice.
You know, You make a very accurate point. However, I get to see the opposite side of that because I get to build these programs and work with these individuals who are doing these amazing things, specifically, you know, serving in hospice. And it's really amazing to me to watch this grow as quickly as it is, which tells me more and more people are understanding what hospice is about and understanding that more individuals in our community need their companionship, need their presence, need their support. But yes, there's a lot of education that needs to happen. There's a lot of conversations that need to happen. When I tell close friends or when I tell individuals what I do, they look at me like, wow, man, that is crazy. That's scary. And then they hear what I have to say. You know, they hear how beautiful this process is. And they see from me the passion that I have to work with these volunteers, to, you know, help them do these amazing things in the lives of those in our community.
How do you prepare volunteers for facing a death that maybe is more difficult, that mm-hmm. doesn't go quite as smoothly as others that they've experienced?
We really do the best we can to, you know, have them educated for absolutely every possibility. And they know that they could go into a space and they might be turned away because the family decides at that moment that, no, this is our time. We need this with the patient. Or they could go into a patient's room and the patient is really needing more physical symptom management cares. And that's not something that the final hours volunteer necessarily provides. And so with that, you know, whatever the challenge can be, they figure out a way that they can still be supportive. And sometimes if that's to go away, it's to go away. It's whatever the need of the patient and the family is.
If a listener is listening to this and thinking, I'd like to volunteer, but I don't know if I'm right mm-hmm. for this, mm-hmm. You know, how do they discern for themselves mm-hmm. whether hospice volunteering in whatever capacity, whether the final hours mm-hmm. program or otherwise, is right for them? You know, what are some of the things that you urge people to really think about?
I urge people to have an awareness of their own mortality, you know, have them really question what life is about. And, you know, it is funny, as a society, we tend to believe that we are immortal, and that's not the truth, you know. And I think often whether someone's had an experience with hospice or whether or not someone's very interested because they believe in this cause and they want to give them of themselves, they all have something to learn when they come here. And there's really an awakening and a healing process for people. If ever someone were questioning whether or not this is the organization to serve or this is the mission that they should be on, you know, in hospice, I think what they need to know is they will gain so much more fulfillment from serving in hospice than many other opportunities, because this will give them an opportunity to really reflect on their personal lives and what they can really give. And I think the greatest gift we can give is our companionship and our unconditional love.
Well, Katie Corey, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.
Katie Corey is the manager of volunteer services for Horizon Hospice and Home Care, with offices in Milwaukee, Hartford, and Mequon. It's one of the state's largest full-service home care and hospice providers. Corey spoke with Stephanie Lecce about the Final Hours Volunteer Program. You can hear more of their conversation as supplemental audio from WUWM.com/Lake Effect, and you can hear the rest of our series segments from WUWM.com/Death and Dying. We'll take another short break and then return with a song by Menominee Falls native Rebecca Rigo, who returns to perform in her hometown this Friday. Lake Effect returns in just a moment on WUWM.